Chapter 6. The next leg of our journey had begun. The walls of the capital city of Sorial faded away behind us as the caravan turned toward the south, but we still had a long way to go before we reached the border of the realm. After we passed through the city of Kassar, we would reach Edinburgh Manor, but then we would be on the edge of the map. Valinwood's golden walls glistened in the early morning light, and with the mountains behind the city, it created a beautiful backdrop scene for our ride. Nameless flew high overhead, and I kept track of his flight path in my peripheral vision as I directed Goliath down the path. The iridescent dragon sparkled in the sunlight, so he was easy to spot, but he kept trying to sneak up on me by swooping through the clouds. Then he would circle around and land on my horse's rump, and his chirps indicated how hilarious he thought he was. "Yeah, you're cute," I chuckled at the playful dragon. Ryandale had overseen the resupply of our caravan during our visit to Valinwood, so I had everything I needed to make the long trek across the increasingly hostile terrain between the capital and the border. There was a new Duke of Edinburgh, and I intended to vet the man King Frederick had placed in charge of the southern territory. I'd been the one to arrest the former duke for treason, and he'd been a close friend to the king, so I didn't trust anyone. All part of being a god. Goliath nickered and tossed his head, and for a moment I thought he was agreeing with my thoughts. The white stallion had been with me ever since I'd killed his former owner, the loser lord himself, Lucian. The fool came at me with an army of 50 men, but I'd given him lethal proof of my dominance, and then I'd claimed the spoils I wanted. The horse seemed much happier with me, and he'd proven himself a reliable steed ever since. "Next stop, Kassar," I said, as Ryandale rode up beside me. "I've been there before. You're gonna love it."
"I've heard great things about it, sir," Ryandale said, but the twinkle in his eyes told me he'd picked up on my sarcasm. "Can't wait."
"How many men do you think will desert us once we reach the desert? This is going to be a test of their willpower and obedience. I've been told the whole realm is in the middle of a war, so we need to keep our guard up at all times."
"The men are ready, sir."
Ryandale nodded curtly.
"We won't let you down."
"I know you won't," I said, and I clicked my tongue to urge Goliath on a little faster. "You never have before, so why start now?" We traveled onward until the light began to fade, and then the front of the caravan stopped to set up camp. By the time the tail end had caught up to us, the tents were erected and a fire was burning. Soon, it would be difficult to find wood to burn, so I made a point to appreciate the blaze while I could. The desert would be intolerably hot during the day, but equally cold once the sun set. There would be predators roaming the terrain as well, so we'd have to keep a close watch on the supply trains. Coyotes, desert cats, and badgers would be common in Edinburgh territory, but I had no idea what lay ahead in the Kotar Desert. I helped unload some food from the wagon while a small group of soldiers worked together to cook the evening meal, and the entire caravan lined up between the tents to wait for their serving. After everyone got their bowls of stew and day-old rolls we'd bought in Valinwood, the sounds of conversation and laughter filled the air. The soldiers took turns patrolling the perimeter of our camp, but everything was calm out in the twilight shadows. The scrub brush swayed in the breeze, and I heard the hoot of an owl. It was peaceful, but a part of me was still constantly on alert.
"Nameless!"
I called out as I craned my neck up to peer at the sky. Clouds hovered overhead, but they didn't look like they would produce anything just yet.
"Dinner time!"
I'd brought several barrels full of butchered deer meat, since that was the little dragon's favorite food, and I'd used salt to preserve it. But I knew it wouldn't last forever. I would have to hunt before we reached the border. Nameless swooped out of the sky with a loud squawk, and an instant later, he landed lightly on my shoulder. I was glad his landings were getting smoother, and the bruises on my back were finally starting to heal, but it wouldn't be long before he was too big to ride on me.
A buzzing, purr-like sound echoed through my mind, and I whipped my head around in all directions in search of the source. Nameless chomped noisily on his dinner at my feet, and he ripped shreds of meat free before tossing them into his maw. I'd never seen him happier, and it made me wonder. Nameless? I raised my eyebrows. Was that you in my head? The baby dragon looked up at me and tilted his head to the side, but no words or any other sounds echoed through my thoughts. Had I imagined it? The crimson, fire-breathing Smeagol had spoken telepathically, but I had no clue how to teach Nameless to do the same. It appeared as though he might figure it out in his own way, though, so I reminded myself to be patient. The lizard-like creature was probably still learning how to communicate at all, but I looked forward to learning more about him and his kind. I chuckled in amusement at the idea of what Nameless would have to say, but then I went in search of my women. I found Eva and Zenda in our tent, and the two women sat cross-legged side by side as they pored over the historian's journals. Their heads were bent over a map, and they debated different points in hushed voices. Oh, where's Mahini? I asked as I let the tent flap fall closed behind me.
She went for a walk,
Eva said, and she pushed herself up to her feet. Then the blonde bombshell crossed the tent to me and placed a sweet kiss against my cheek.
She's okay, I promise.
Good. I smirked. I worry about her.
You worry about all of us.
Zenda muttered from the bedrolls.
It's just in your nature. It's why we love you so much.
I think Nameless communicated telepathically with me. I informed the two beauties in an excited tone. I heard a purring sound in my head while he was eating.
He does love to eat. This is a brilliant development.
Zenda clapped her hands, and she rummaged through her stack of notebooks until she pulled out a dark blue one. The Zaborian squinted as she flipped the pages, but then she found the one she was looking for, and her eyes lit up.
What did he say to you?
I said with a shrug. It was more like a feeling of contentment than an actual word.
Your bond is growing stronger,
Zenda observed as she jotted down some notes.
It's only a matter of time before he's understandable. What if he doesn't speak in the common tongue?
Eva arched an eyebrow, and her smoky gray eyes turned thoughtful.
There is still so much I do not know about the dragons. Oh, it's going to be a wild ride.
We can handle it, together.
The way it should be.
My wife agreed, and she gave me another sweet kiss on the cheek before she returned to the bedrolls. Mahini sighed as she came inside the tent. The pregnant warrior woman flashed me a brilliant smile, but I could see recently shed tears gleaming in her ice-blue eyes.
I do not have the same stamina anymore.
Well, you're going to have to get used to it. It's not just you using your body anymore.
I'm almost ready to kick the little one out.
Mahini groaned as she arched her back and pressed her hands into her hips. The desert goddess's pregnancy had been steadily progressing for several months now, but she was far from ready to birth our child. Still, her rounded stomach protruded further than ever before, and I rubbed it gently as a soft smile stretched across my lips. No, don't be too eager. We want a healthy, full-term baby.
And for my mother to be there.
Mahini added with a nod.
I know. I'm just complaining. Excuse me.
Eva suddenly rushed out with a nauseous expression on her face, and I exchanged a knowing smile with Mahini before I followed the blonde out of the tent. I found my wife heaving into a bucket around the corner of the shelter, and her shoulders shook with the effort it took to expel the bile. Oh, hey, there, there. I comforted as I rubbed her back gently. This is all totally normal.
I'm ready for it to cease.
Eva gasped, and she came up for air with her eyes squeezed shut.
It's torturous.
Are you sure you don't want me to take you back to Bastionville? I could have you in our bed at home in a few moments.
No.
Eva said, and she shook her head as she stood to her feet.
No, I'm coming with you no matter what. This will pass before we reach the desert, right?
Everyone is different. I shrugged. but the others were nauseous for around 3 months.
I'm getting close to that point, according to my calculations,
Eva said, but some of the color returned to her face.
Give me a moment to wash up. I'll be inside soon.
Sure, I grinned. I've got to clean up Nameless's dinner mess anyway. I found the little dragon stretching out his bloated belly, and he chirped happily when he spotted me. Bits of meat were splattered all over, and his muzzle was covered in blood. He had eaten 90% of the meat I'd provided, but it was double what I'd fed him the night before. Oh, you're a mess, I snickered as I scooped the little dragon up into my arms. Then I walked him over to one of the barrels of water positioned throughout the camp, and I grabbed the ladle to scoop some onto the dog-sized beast's face. I used the edge of my shirt to wipe the rest of the mess off his muzzle, and the lizard-like creature struggled against me. Nameless had never attempted to bite me, but his claws were already powerful enough to draw blood if he tried hard enough. Would that change as he got bigger? I was already working on a pair of gloves similar to those used with falconry, and soon I'd be able to teach him tricks and commands. I wanted to have firm control over him before he grew too big for me to easily do so. I cuddled the dragon in my arms like a baby, and he squawked happily as we walked back to the tent. Once he was settled into his mobile roost, I stripped off my clothes and crawled into the sleeping rolls beside my women. Eva snuggled into the crook of my arm, and the blonde threw one leg over my thigh. Her crotch rubbed against my hip, and I chuckled as I rubbed down her back toward her ass. Zenda curled up on my other side, and she nuzzled her nose against my neck until her warm breath elicited goosebumps along my flesh.
Give me space tonight. This baby has been making it hard enough to sleep at night, and I have started to feel claustrophobic.
Yeah, I completely understand, I said, but I reached out my hand to grasp hers. Is this okay?
Yes.
Mahini breathed, and I could sense her relaxing immediately. I squeezed her hand warmly, tucked Zenda's head beneath my chin, and grasped Eva's ass tightly to pull her even closer against me. The next morning dawned hot and dry, and I smacked my lips together to create some moisture. The walls of the tent glowed with the rising sun's rays, and sounds of activity came from all around us. The soldiers were already hard at work tearing down the campsite, but there was still plenty of time for a slow breakfast before the caravan was ready to depart. I rode in the carriage with the women for the remainder of the day, and I watched Nameless fly through the clouds out the window. The terrain grew drier and less green as the day passed, and by the time we set up camp that night, we were surrounded by cracked earth and an empty landscape. There were no trees in sight, and the sounds of wildlife had quieted even more. It was eerie, yet soothing at the same time. We struck camp quickly, but it was a quiet night, so I joined the soldiers on patrol before I crawled into bed for the evening. It was strange how exhausting even riding in a carriage could be, and I fell asleep easily. It took us several more days to reach the next city, but the walls of Kassar were a welcome sight when they finally appeared on the horizon. Dusk was settling in rapidly, but with the city in sight, I knew we would make it to town before the end of the day, even if we had to ride for a time in darkness. The soldiers whooped with delight at the sight of Kassar, but I was proud of how they'd handled themselves so far. No one had complained about our accommodations, but I knew they'd be grateful for a real bed, so I prepared myself to pay for the price of room and board for them all. Ryandale! I called over the heads of men rushing toward the city. Send runners ahead to secure rooms for everyone. I want them all to have full stomachs and soft beds tonight. Yes, sir! Ryandale seemed more than happy to follow this particular command, but he showed no other signs of weariness. Right away, sir! The general pulled his horse to the side and cut through the marching soldiers around us, but then he trotted down the line of the caravan to a group closer to the rear. A few moments later, three horses dashed past the carriages toward the city, and the riders easily outpaced our winding trail of people. By the time we reached the city, there was a welcoming committee made up of local innkeepers and passers-by. I hadn't alerted the new duke to my journey to his territory, and I wanted to surprise him with a visit once I reached Edinburgh Manor. But that wasn't going to happen tonight, so I didn't encourage the typical parade through town we'd grown accustomed to. It would take us a while longer to reach the manor once we left Kassar, but the duke's stronghold was our last stop in Soriol. Let the duke fret over who the mysterious traveler in his territory was. Word would already be spreading around town about the arrival of a caravan, but I could keep my identity a secret until I reached the duke's town. We all divided up between the inns with rooms available, but I picked the Pilgrim Inn for my women and I to stay in, because I was familiar with the establishment from my previous trip into the south. The innkeeper was among those who greeted us at the gates, and our carriage rolled down the street toward his business as he walked alongside. Ryandale oversaw getting the rest of the caravan split up and boarded for the night, and I handed him a small bag of gold coins for his trouble. The general flashed me a wide grin before he trotted his horse toward the stables, but he had orders to check in with me first thing in the morning. I was sure more than a few men would find their way to the local taverns, and they'd spend the remainder of the evening gifting wenches and whores their hard-earned coins. "Welcome to Kassar," I said to Zenda as the historian peered out the carriage windows in awe. "It's dusty, dirty, and last time we were here the people were very rude. It wasn't their fault, though, since the Duke of Edinburgh let his sons run the territory for him. But I'm eager to see how things have changed around here."
"I'm sure their influence stirred up the traditional methods,"
Zenda said as her blue lips twitched upwards in a smile.
"You have a way of doing that."
"Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I arrested the former duke for treason against the crown and stripped his sons of their titles in the process. Now, a whole new ruling class was introduced with the specific instructions to change the way things were operated."
"What do you know about the new duke?"
Eva asked.
"Anything we should be aware of?"
"He's King Fred's distant cousin. I'm holding all my judgments until I meet him in person and read his mind."
"Who is overseeing Kassar?"
Mahini asked.
"Another haughty son who wrongly calls himself a warrior?"
We'll find out tomorrow. I want to visit the market, restock our supplies, and scope out some rumors from the locals. In the meantime, I want everyone on their best behaviors. We don't need to stir up any drama." The bazaar in Kassar was epic the last time I'd visited the Southern Territory, and I was eager to get some gifts for my women back home. Kassar was our last stop before we reached Edinburgh Manor, and I'd take everything back to Bastionville before I crossed the border. The three ladies and I ate a delicious dinner of cheesy potato stew, and a pumpkin cider on the side warmed my belly. Then we retired to our rooms for the evening, but Mahini and Eva took a room for themselves, while Zenda followed me to the best room in the inn. The Pilgrim Inn didn't have any king suites available, so we had to split up for the night, but I didn't mind getting a little one-on-one time with the blue-skinned goddess. We made love until the wee hours of the morning, and her contented sighs were the last thing I heard before I fell asleep. The next morning, the four of us met up with Ryandale to visit the market. Jorgen and Corvus followed behind the general, and they kept their hands near the hilts of their swords as they scanned the dense crowds. We wore robes similar to what the locals had on, and our turbans were pulled down to block the dust from our noses. The women of Kassar all wore veils covering their faces, except for the eyes, so my ladies modeled themselves in the same fashion. We joined the throng as it flowed toward the market square, and the crowd pulled us along with them until we reached the center of town. Then the people dispersed to the various stalls and vendors, and some space was created around our group. "I'm going to take a look around," I informed the general. "Purchase whatever supplies we need and meet me back here."
"Take Jorgen with you, sir,"
Ryandale countered.
"I'd feel better about pickpockets if you have someone watching your back."
"Fine," I chuckled, and I jerked my chin toward the avid hunter. "Fall in, then." Jorgen bobbed his head and followed me and the ladies toward the stalls, and I clapped him on the shoulder before I turned to the first merchant. The vendor had laid out rugs and tapestries woven in intricate, colorful designs, and he greeted me with a shrewd, narrow-eyed look. Well, the friendliness of the South hadn't changed much. I haggled and bargained with the merchant for a while, before we both agreed on a price for a few rugs, and then I left the vendor with instructions for how to deliver my goods to the caravan. I was pleased with the deal when I handed him the coins, and we continued on to check out everything else for sale. There was exotic food everywhere, and the mouth-watering aromas drifted into my nostrils constantly, so I kept stopping to purchase small amounts of various snacks. Mysterious meat on sticks, pickled mushrooms, and fermented nuts were only a small example of what I shoved in my face during our shopping trip, but Mahini was just as ravenous as I was. The desert goddess greedily snagged food out of my hands before I even had the chance to give it to her, and I laughed as she devoured a kebab in a few large bites. It was a wonderful day, but I was grateful for the ability to mix in with the locals. No one knew the god of time was in town, and for the moment, that was the way I wanted it to stay. There'd be plenty of time for meet and greets on the trip back to Bastionville after we found Mahini's mom. We met back up with Ryandale at midday, and the general had Corvus hauling packages in his arms. The two men both managed to salute me when I approached, and I flashed them a wide-toothed grin. "Well, at least the market is still thriving. The new Duke is doing one thing right."
"Did you experience any hostility, sir?"
No more than I expected." I shrugged. "People in the South aren't the friendliest, but you'll get used to it. Everyone is either a mark or an enemy around here, so, you know, watch your six, Rye guy."
"My six?"
Ryandale tilted his head to the side. "You're back." I simplified. We stayed in Kassar for the rest of the day, and my purse was much smaller by the time we headed back to the inn for the night. Overall, the people around here seemed to be doing all right for themselves, and most of the gossip revolved around the magistrate's handling of criminals. An overeager judge wasn't my top priority at the moment, but I made a mental note to deal with it on the way back if the new Duke hadn't. The next morning, Ryandale was waiting for me in the inn's common room. The young general saluted, and then he rested his hand on the hilt of his sword.
"We're ready to head out, sir. Just give the word."
"Yep, once the girls wake up, we'll leave," I said before I gestured to a table. "Come have breakfast with me. It'll be several days before we get another good meal." Eva, Mahini, and Zenda joined us a short while later, and they were just in time to place their orders along with ours. Then we enjoyed a slow morning meal, and the sun was high in the sky by the time we departed the pilgrim. The road to Edinburgh Manor was even rougher than the one to Kassar, and the carriages had to go a lot slower over the many potholes and cracks in the ground. We didn't cover very much ground on the first day, and we camped with the walls of the city still in sight on the horizon behind us. The soldiers seemed rejuvenated from their night in real beds, though, and the camp was a bustle of activity before dawn the next morning. We made better time the following days, and I went back to alternating between Goliath and the carriage with my women. Mahini napped more and more, but Eva and Zenda were full of questions, so we discussed our plans for the upcoming visit with the new Duke and what problems could lay ahead of us. It was nice to have trustworthy people to help me figure out the best possible scenarios. Then I would make them all happen perfectly. Being the god of time meant I had total control over what made it into the final run-through, and I would ensure I always came out on top. After over a week of travel, the walls of Edinburgh Manor came into sight, and a collective breath of relief swept through the soldiers. The town was built into a valley, but despite the steep dips in the sand dunes, there was little cover from the outside, and the city was laid bare before us as we approached. Atop the tallest hill among the oasis was the manor, and the crystal-clear windows glistened in the fading sunlight. Everyone quickened their paces so we could reach the city before twilight stole our sight, and Ryandale sent runners ahead to alert the new Duke to our presence. We struck a temporary camp just outside the city walls, and I hastily bathed before putting on some of my nicer clothes. I didn't care so much about impressing the Duke as I did with presenting myself as his superior, but that required attention to detail. I combed back my hair and trimmed my beard in a small mirror, and then I straightened my vest and gathered up my companions. Ryandale, Jorgen, and Corvus led soldiers who formed an honor guard in front of and behind me and the women, and we made our way through the city to the manor. The sizable town around the manor was ringed with stone walls, but the gates stood open to us. People moving about the streets stopped to watch us pass, but we didn't receive any praise or admiration from the crowd. The faces were expressionless as they stared at us, and children were quickly ushered indoors. A solemn ambiance filled the air, and no one seemed very happy. But it was hard to tell for certain when most people covered their faces. Yeah, not much had changed. We were greeted in the courtyard of the manor by a parade of guards and servants, but then a stately man in a brown vest and trousers stepped out of the house. He had dusty brown-colored hair and wire-rimmed glasses perched on the edge of his hooked nose. Even though I knew he was younger than me, he appeared to be a much older man, and his back was slumped from time spent sitting down. The guy looked like a nerd, but that meant he was probably smarter than he appeared. So I reserved my judgment until I got to know him a little better. Still, this was not an intimidating man. I'd have him wrapped around my pinky finger in no time. I made a new save point as I approached the new Duke of Edinburgh Manor, and I stopped our procession a few feet away from him. The soldiers spread out to flank me on both sides, and I bowed low before the ruler of the Southern Territory.
"Welcome, Your Grace, to Edinburgh Manor," the Duke said as he spread his hands. "It would be an honor to host you for as long as you chose to stay."
"Thanks, and it's a pleasure to finally meet you in person," I grinned. "You can call me Bash,
and you can call me Fester, Fester Williams."
The Duke inclined his head, but he didn't bow. "Please, come inside." I was reminded of the Adams family for a moment, so a playful grin stretched across my lips as I followed Duke Williams inside the manor. I'd been here before, but I hadn't used the main entrance during my previous visit, so it was nice to get the full tour. The domed ceiling of the foyer was illuminated by chandeliers hanging from exposed beams, but skylights allowed even more light in. A double-curving staircase led to the next level, but the Duke led us through an archway beneath the steps. We entered a grand dining hall, and the Duke escorted me to the chair at the head of the table before he sat to my right-hand side. Servants swooshed through side doors with carts full of food and drinks, and a moment later I was sipping some of the finest wine I'd ever tasted since coming to this medieval fantasy world. Now this was the treatment the God of Time deserved. Duke Williams was all right in my book, so far. After the lavish meal, the new Duke led us into a sitting room where coffee and cakes were served. Mahini moaned with delight over the sweets, and even Eva didn't turn her nose up at the sight of food. Zenda's bright eyes observed every detail, and I knew every tidbit would be committed to the pages of her journal soon enough. "What brings you down south?" Fester asked in a casual enough tone, and he held his mug in front of his face as a coy smile lit up his dark eyes.
"Anything you'd be willing to share, that is. I don't mean to impose."
Of course. I chuckled, but I took my time sipping my coffee before I continued. "I'm headed even further south, actually. You are merely a stop along the way, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to meet you in person."
"I'm glad you took the chance while on your journey. I have heard a lot about you, and I wish to confirm the mixed accounts. If I may be so bold, can you really travel through time?"
"If it's necessary." I shrugged. "I have a lot of power." The Duke was quiet for a while, and the women complimented him on the meal before he returned to his questioning of me.
"If you're headed even further south, then you plan on leaving Soriol. I assume you're aware of the dangers that entails."
"Enlighten me." I smirked, and I leaned back in my armchair with an ankle hooked onto my knee. "I'm curious what you would say."
"Well..."
The Duke hesitated, and his gaze flicked between my companions before coming back to me.
"There's a warlord conquering the individual tribes. Voice everywhere, and there are no safe havens south of the border.
Why is that? How could this newcomer succeed when so many others before have failed?
So you're aware of Kotar's history, or at least the part about the former attempts to conquer the tribes.
Sure, who isn't?
The Duke's gaze turned to Mahini, and the pregnant warrior woman stiffened beneath his examination.
You are from the south, are you not, Archduchess?
The Duke asked, but his demeanor softened.
I don't mean to assume.
You are correct.
Mahini nodded curtly.
I was born among the Kamaku tribe.
I've never heard of it, but I know there are countless tribes populating the desert, and each one has its own rich history and customs. Language shifts from tribe to tribe, so there are some regional differences, but translations can be difficult.
So, well, every tribe is a different kingdom, basically.
Yeah, in a way. It's like there are completely different peoples agreeing to share the same land, but there are no formal laws governing the entire population. Each tribe is free to ally or ostracize whatever other tribes they desire. Unification seemed like a dream, but somehow this new player has gained ground.
It won't last long with me around. It didn't seem like the Kotar Desert had any issues before, but if this warlord is ambitious enough, he'll eventually look to the north.
I agree.
The Duke nodded sagely.
It would be best to squash this early on, before it gains even more ground in the south. Otherwise, the war is only going to spread.
All right, let's work together to make sure that doesn't happen. You are the first line of defense in the worst-case scenario, so I want to make sure you have the support you need from the Crown.
That is amazing, yes, of course,
the Duke gushed, and he smiled warmly at me.
I must say, your reputation is spot on. You are a fair and just ruler.
You can tell already? I arched one eyebrow.
Well, yes and no. I suppose time will be the true test of your character.
Well, that's easy. I'm the god of time. Time's kind of my thing.
So it seems.
The Duke laughed. We enjoyed the rest of the evening with the new Duke of Edinburgh, and then we retired to lavish chambers where mints were even placed upon the silk pillowcases. Oh, the red sheets looked made for sex, and I hastily began to strip off my clothes as soon as the door closed behind us. The three women did the same, and we made love together until the sun rose in the sky. The next morning, the Duke invited us to a breakfast buffet of sorts, and he was more business-minded than he'd been the previous evening. Fester inquired about our water supplies, horses, shoes, and wheels on the carriages, and he quickly sent out runners to see to all of our needs.
"Can't have you conquering the south with no supplies," he said when I thanked him for his efforts. "You represent all of Sorial, and that includes me. It's really the least I could do."
"I'll come back through here on the way home. We can spend more time chatting together then."
"I am anxious for your safe return, Your Grace,"
the Duke said with a bob of his head.
"But I have utter faith in the success of your mission. Whatever you set out to do, you will win. I have no doubts."
"Me either."
The caravan assembled by mid-morning, and we rode out of the manor in a slow procession before the head of the line turned to the south. It had been nice getting to know the new Duke, and my worries about the quality of his character were put to rest. I was looking forward to picking his brain about more of the history of the land, and I was sure a nerdy guy like him would have an enormous library. I was confident he didn't have anything else enormous, but, we couldn't all be gods. The manor slid away behind the sand dunes, and I turned my attention to the road ahead. The ground grew more sandy, and vegetation became less frequent. I saw lizards and rodents scurrying around, though, so it wasn't entirely devoid of life, and it wasn't long before we approached a large wooden sign buried in the sand. Border of Sorial, now entering the Kotar Desert.
Well, we'd made it.
The God of Time had arrived in the southern lands. I made a new save point before we went any further, but then we continued to travel onward into the desert. We walked for hours without event, and I began to contemplate a nap in the carriage. Then, a scream suddenly pierced the air, and a rumbling sound went through the ground beneath Goliath's hooves right before a massive, fleshy worm with a maw full of razor-sharp teeth launched out of the sand and wiggled toward the closest soldiers. Three men were grasped in its snapping jaws before I could even react, and I cursed under my breath.